that again.
Thank you.
Dr. Wafik Algeri and myself will be summarizing four major areas related to terms of reference 6, 7, and 8. Next slide, please. First, for immune changes, literature on both site-specific and non-specific immune effects was reviewed, focusing on the cumulative short and long-term impact of repeated boosting. This is an area where data are still emerging. Second, on biodistribution, the clinical and scientific information was reviewed, both from the literature and from the FDA. Third, frame shifting was tracked given its potential to alter protein products and downstream immune responses. And finally, for impurities, published and unpublished data about residual DNA in existing mRNA products was reviewed. Next slide. There is evidence that COVID vaccination, especially after multiple doses, is associated with a range of immune changes. One of the best documented findings is IgG4 class switching, reported in a seminal study by Arang and colleagues. They showed that individuals receiving Pfizer's BNT162b2 mRNA vaccine developed anti-spike IgG4 antibodies and IgG4 switched memory B cells within 6 months of their second dose, with levels rising further after a third dose. Importantly, these changes were linked to reduced antibody effector function consistent with IgG4's role in promoting tumor immune tolerance. Other studies have reported the production of anti-idiotype antibodies and persistent alterations in IgG glycosylation patterns. These structural modifications can influence how antibodies interact with immune cells, tipping the balance toward either inflammation or tolerance. Beyond antibody changes, vaccination has also been linked to long-lasting shifts in cytokine profiles, with elevated inflammatory cytokines persisting for months. These immune alterations may contribute to an increased risk of recurrent or persistent infections in some individuals. Finally, work from Akiko Iwasaki's lab at Yale has demonstrated cellular immune changes, including reductions in circulating memory and effector CD4 T cells, alongside increases in TNF-alpha positive CD8 T cells following vaccination. Next slide, please. These and other studies raise questions about the persistence of the immunological changes associated with mRNA vaccination, along with their long-term clinical significance and consequences. And because of the long-term changes in cytokine profiles and T-cell ratios observed in vaccinated individuals, more research is needed to evaluate vaccine effects on shaping both innate and adaptive immunity over the long term. Next slide. For biodistribution, Pfizer did not use the actual spike mRNA product in their studies. Instead, they substituted in a luciferase reporter mRNA packaged in the same lipid nanoparticles. This approach allowed them to track where the mRNA traveled in rodents. The studies showed that following intramuscular injection, most of the mRNA remained at the site of injection, but there was also notable levels detected in the liver. Despite the limitations of this approach, which can underestimate low-level or transient distributions to other tissues, it nevertheless showed that the vaccine components do not remain confined to the injection site. Next slide. For Moderna, no dedicated biodistribution study was performed with the COVID mRNA itself. Instead, data was provided from a surrogate product, a CMV mRNA, mRNA-1647, which used the same lipid nanoparticle formulation. In their rat study, after intramuscular injections, high levels of the mRNA were detected at the injection site, but also in multiple organs, such as the draining lymph nodes, spleen, eye, and liver. Lower levels were also found across a wide range of tissues, including the heart, lungs, testes, and brain. Importantly, this study clearly showed that the mRNA can cross the blood-brain barrier. Next slide. Consistent with what is seen in animal studies, the vaccine mRNA and its spike protein have been detected in humans across multiple tissues, including blood, lymph nodes, the heart, and even the brain. These findings make it clear that the mRNA does not remain confined to the injection site. Importantly, persistence has been documented well beyond the initial hours or days, lasting weeks in some tissues, and in certain studies, detectable for many months. Next slide. To summarize the biodistribution data, it's important to note that neither Moderna nor Pfizer used their actual commercial mRNA vaccine products in the preclinical biodistribution studies. Instead, they relied on surrogate construct packaged in same or similar lipid nanoparticles. Second, the results of those studies show that the mRNA and lipid nanoparticles were not confined to the injection site. Systemic distribution was observed with evidence that the mRNA can cross the blood-brain barrier. Consistent with these findings, studies in humans have confirmed that vaccine mRNA can be detected in multiple tissues, including lymph nodes, the heart, the central nervous system, and blood. Finally, persistence is not just short-term. In some reports, mRNA has been detected for weeks to months, and in certain cases, as long as 706 days post-vaccination. Taken together, these data highlight that biodistribution is broad and persistence is longer than initially expected, raising important questions and concerns for ongoing research and safety monitoring. Next slide.
Thank you, Dr. Cooper-Wasser. The work group focused on a couple of other areas that I will describe. The first is ribosomal frame shifting, which is a mechanism used by viruses to express different open reading frames that can help viruses progress infections. Nucleoside modified mRNA with pseudouridine increases frame shifting significantly up to tenfold. Next slide. And there's evidence that these unintended off-target proteins generate an immune response in humans along with antibody production. The immunogenic or toxic properties of the non-spike proteins is unknown, and the health consequences of prolonged and persistent non-spike protein production have not been studied. Next slide. Another issue I'd like to bring your attention to involves multiple reports of DNA impurities in Pfizer and Moderna mRNA vaccine vials. The most recent report came from Spiker et al., where they looked at 32 vials, including 16 unique vaccine lots, and found evidence of fragmented DNA, plasmid DNA in both Pfizer and Moderna vials. And in all Pfizer vials, they found SV40 enhancer origin of replication that was not detected in any of the Moderna vials. Next slide. So there are some differences between the Pfizer and Moderna mRNA vaccines, principally around the SV40 promoter enhancer origin sequences, as well as the detectable amounts of DNA fragments. I would like to point out that the FDA limit of 10 nanograms was set for naked DNA, not DNA in the presence of lipid nanoparticles that can carry DNA into cells and their nuclei. Next slide. So to summarize the DNA impurities, both the Pfizer and Moderna vaccines have been found to contain DNA that exceeds the FDA limits. Importantly, the DNA impurity limits do not take into account lipid nanoparticles, which carry DNA into cells and nuclei. There are concerns due to known DNA integration and gene activation disruption by SV40 promoter enhancer sequences. Next slide. There has not been a reliable or really any population study in the United States with cancer outcomes after COVID vaccination. But cancers have been reported in mRNA vaccinated individuals in temporal association to immunization. Actually, the number should be 48 case reports that are listed below. Primary cutaneous lymphomas is actually 24. There's a study of 96 cases of pancreatic ductal adenocarcinoma with worse outcomes among those with higher IgG4 levels, which occurs, as Dr. Cooper-Wasser mentioned, with repeated vaccination. There's also a study not listed here with 76 colorectal cancers. It's a case control study where the vaccinated seem to have more mismatch repair deficient cancer. Next slide. There are gaps in our knowledge, including the extent of DNA contamination in current lots, the biodistribution of any contaminating plasmid DNA that can persistently produce spike protein, genomic DNA and integration in tissues or tumors in vaccinated patients is an area we don't know much about at this point, along with the involved mechanisms. The prevalence of adverse outcomes from impurities versus the extent of contamination is an area that needs more information. We have a gap in our knowledge of the relationship between multiple vaccinations and spike persistence. We do not know enough about the cancer mechanisms, certainly questions about causality. However, there are numerous plausible mechanisms. There are variations in host susceptibilities to adverse outcomes that are emerging for certain other adverse events that are likely relevant to the areas of uncertainty that we are speaking about. So next slide. In summary, there are COVID vaccine safety concerns that stem from unexpected biological activities of mRNA gene therapy platforms, raising questions about potential pathogenic mechanisms and human subjects' research protections. We would like to put forth some recommendations, including proactive and modernized safety surveillance programs that involve blood and tissue-based monitoring, epidemiologic studies, AI-driven analysis using reliable standardized data sets, expanded autopsy programs to clarify causality in serious outcomes, programs that systemically evaluate COVID-19 vaccine safety, FDA approval policies calibrated to gene therapy-like risks, importantly, DNA limits that take into account lipid nanoparticles, stronger pharmaceutical accountability, and CDC guidelines ensuring transparent risk disclosure, mitigation strategies, and robust informed consent. Thank you.